Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
For my world to live, yours must die.
That is not Optimus. Prime! I can't do this!
You are our last hope.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I'm your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Senor Chad Hot Rod Riley.
Hola.
How's it going today,
or
my friend?
Should I say bonjour?
That too, yeah. That's
Hot Rod.
We're not going to get into that.
Hot Rod.
Well, technically, we are going to get into that.
We are going to get into that. We're going to get way too deep into it.
We got a great show in store for you,
Well, I wouldn't go so far.
Well, we got an interesting review and conversation to have ahead of us, so stick around. The Filmlosophers is presented by Mingle Media TV and reconfigured into a sports car and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. Looking for the next planet to call home? We can help you stay up to date on the latest movie news and reviews of film releases with new episodes of The Filmlosophers every Wednesday morning on Libsyn, Audioboom, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, and Player FM. Don't let the Cybertron Sorceress make you an evil goon. Connect with us on social media to release some of the tension. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 for more opportunities to connect. Last but not least, you can access all of our previous episodes at vgbstudios.com along other amazing podcasts such as Video Game Bang and Me, Myself, and I. As I said, we do have an interesting conversation, I guess, if we want to put it that way.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
We've had the esteemed pleasure of checking out a film that actually debuts, oddly enough, on Wednesday. Right? Isn't that what you said? Wednesday?
That's right. We're going to give it a W for Wednesday.
So, it's weird because this show debuts on a Wednesday.
For win.
And the film debuts on a Wednesday as well. So, I think that's pretty cool. Right?
You know, I mean, for those of us who are grasping at straws, anything goes at this point.
We are talking about The Last Night. Transformers, that is, The Last Night. Tonight on this show. We had the chance to check out the press screening of this film yesterday. And so we've had plenty of time to dream, nightmare about it, just mull
forget
over
about it entirely.
And so we decided we were going to talk about this movie on the show. And luckily, because this show debuts on Wednesday, and the film debuts on Wednesday, we're just going to let you know spoilers.
We can talk about whatever we want. And just usually when we talk about having a show that's going to include spoilers, we like to forewarn you several times.
Yes.
Even in the midst of our conversation. With this particular film, it really doesn't matter. I mean, maybe we could count on half of one finger the number of spoilers that would really upset people to know ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because most of this film makes no sense whatsoever. So whatever we tell you, it's not going to matter.
No.
And also, it likely doesn't matter to the story either.
He's got a point. Humans, the Transformers of Last Night, humans are at war with the Transformers, and Optimus Prime is gone.
Once again.
The key to saving the future lies buried in the secrets of the past and the hidden history of Transformers on Earth.
Except not really.
Now, it's up to the unlikely alliance of Cade Yeager, played by Mark Wahlberg, Bumblebee, an English lord, played by Anthony Hopkins, and an Oxford professor, played by Laura Haddock, to save the world.
Kind of.
So, this film, directed by Michael Boom Boom Bay, the film stars, as we said, Mark Wahlberg, Laura Haddock, Anthony Hopkins, Josh Duhamel, Isabella Moner, as well as the vocal talents of Peter Cullen and Frank Welker. right on time.
And that's about as much, like, in terms of just the factual information, what you just said, which was very simply giving a one-sentence summary of the film, called a log line, by the way.
Yes.
And listing the director and some of the film's many quote-unquote stars. That is probably the most lucid that this conversation is going to be based on the film.
Yes.
I mean, it all goes crazy from here.
It does. This film, serving as the fifth installment in the Bay series, was written by Art Markham. Markham will also be the writer for the upcoming installments and spinoffs in this franchise, including the solo Bumblebee film, as well as part 7 and part 8 of the series.
Okay, now here is where the Bayhem mayhem begins, because you have one writer listed here. There were three or four writing credits and then four story by credits, one of whom was Akiva Goldsman, who is a pretty highly acclaimed screenwriter. He wrote quite a few movies earlier in the 2000s. I believe A Beautiful Mind was one of his.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a few others that have, you know, compelling subtext underneath what's happening on the screen. Obviously, you don't go to a Transformers film for subtext in the performances or the story. That's not why you're there. But I was, part of me, a 1% portion of my brain was hoping that someone of his stature being involved in this film might save it from being the trash heap that most of the other ones have been, but it really didn't.
And see, the thing is this, is that...
And I won't lay it all at this Art Markham's feet either.
True.
We know what causes something like this to happen in the world.
In this particular franchise.
And his first name is Michael.
And his last name is Bay. And it's true. And the whole reason why we mention Art Markham is for the... in context to what we're talking about. But Chad is correct. Having somebody like this on staff as far as writing is concerned, you would assume, it would be safe to assume at the time, that the film may actually have a cohesive story, maybe even a plausible plot line that runs through the entire thing. But, man, this was just one big...
No, I'll tell you what they did. They said, Art, you're going to take pages 1 through 4, 17 through 23, 32 through 33, 51 through 72, and 101 through 104.
101.
And then they split up the other ones between other guys, and that's why you ended up with, okay, I just did what they told me to do and hope that somebody else had the overarching creative vision for this film.
The Last Knight has topped out as the most expensive Transformers film to date, with a budget of $260 million.
You just won't dialogue with me. It's like we're doing two different things, kind of like this movie. I keep trying to derail you from your notes, and you're just like, the movie debuts on June 21st.
I was just wanting
Thank you, Siri.
You're welcome. You're welcome. No, and it's one of those things when it comes to this film where you, like you were saying, I mean, looking at Akiva Goldsman's, you know, previous works, I mean, you got stuff like I, Robot, Beautiful Mind, I Am Legend.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
These are all incredible mm-hmm. movies. And then you get this, and I would half expect that somebody, like you said, of his caliber, somebody who his works are known for a lot more than just simplistic stuff. It's not like he's over here doing cartoons on the side and he's like, oh, you should do this. Okay. This man has credibility in the industry.
He does. And now, to his credit, he was given a story credit, not a screenplay credit, which those are different things behind mm-hmm. the scenes. I won't bore you because we're going to do that later anyway.
It's true.
We because you're not, trust me, listener, dear listener, you won't understand a thing. Trust me, these spoilers matter not because it won't make any sense. But maybe it allows you to make an important choice in your life, which is spend that money in a different way. but no,
well,
I mean, there are differences. The screenplay by versus the story by
yeah.
credit structure, because I believe Art appears in both.
Yes.
And so the story by is really the underlying architecture and flow of the story. The screenplay means, oh, I put the words of dialogue and the action cues onto a piece of paper or a computer screen, most likely. And that's the screenplay. And, of course, a film like this, you said $260 million budget, which is absurd, absolutely absurd, to have that much money spent and end up with this junk heap.
Yeah. And, you know, I could totally, so now that you mentioned that.
But you have a lot of creative voices, a lot of writers,
yeah,
a lot of producers, everybody kind of, oh, and we should have them do this.
Yeah.
Oh, and we should put in a transforming Mountain Dew thing, which they didn't do in this one, thankfully.
Thank
but
God.
They did bring several old Transformers back into this one for like, you know, a second apiece. So you think, oh, are they going to be in this movie? No. No, they're really not. They're not important in any way.
And it's funny because now that you mention it, with in terms of the separation between the screenplay and the story, I could totally see where this may have started out as a very beautiful homage, if you will, because one of the things that I was talking to Chad about as soon as we left, one of my biggest issues was that this film pulls from a particular film or a particular property or source that is very big in this franchise, and it doesn't do it justice at all. In fact, it desecrates it
what
entirely.
What would that property be, Eddie?
That would be the 1986 movie, The Transformers, the movie.
The cartoon film.
The first animated cartoon film for the Transformers franchise.
Indeed.
Which we'll get into all that and all that. But I can see how with him possibly at the beginning stages, this was like, oh, well, yeah, let's do a beautiful homage to this. Like, I could possibly see him saying that in the room, like, we could do this, we could do that, we could do that. And then everybody like, oh, that'd be great. Yeah, whatever. The time comes for decisions to be made, air quotes, and be like, you know, it'd be so cool. We should, like, totally make Optimus, like, do this, and we should make this happen, and that, let's change it to that. And money,
you know,
talks, that's all I got to say.
My suspicion, and unfortunately, we're going to see whether or not this is accurate because they've been greenlit for numerous other films. My suspicion is that he was brought in from an even more overarching perspective than this one film. This film, I won't say to its credit, this film does, though, set up a larger arc, a larger narrative arc than it pays off. There's quite a bit of, let's call them untied shoelaces by the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Threads and treads, if you will, that are left unresolved. And I would bet that his role probably had more to do with how do we set up another multi-film sequence with the Transformers than necessarily this individual portion of it. Because they do, you can tell, for as like incoherent and terrible as this movie truly is, like it's really, really ridiculous.
Oh,
how
yeah.
It jumps around, it throws plot points and characters away when it's not wanting you to pay attention to them, and then sometimes picks them back up and sometimes doesn't, and doesn't care one way or the other. So it's a huge, gigantic mess. I mean, it's just a bunch of, it's like washing or watching clothes in a washing machine just spin around. And every once in a while, you get the same, I don't know, like burst of red from a sock. And you're like, oh, there's that sock again. Oh, there it goes by. You know, and it's just all lost in the wash.
Yeah.
But you can tell that underlying all of the mess, there was an attempt made to transform this franchise into something more legitimate and long-lasting than it has been up to this point. Up to this point, it's just been episodes.
True.
Resolved, you know, one and done, just resolved. And this one actually tries to set up a new arc, a new sequence, which I would say the only way it really succeeds is by virtue of the fact that it doesn't resolve things by the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah, no
doubt.
It's
still left open-ended.
So, obviously, if you haven't gathered yet, we did not have the greatest of times seeing this film. So, let's just jump right in and kind of talk about it a bit more. So first impressions before going into the film. Obviously, we've both have not had much many good experiences with this film franchise. I personally am not a fan because of how much it just doesn't do the entire franchise itself justice. It doesn't do any kind of
the overall intellectual property
yes,
of the Transformers.
Exactly.
The toys, the cartoons,
exactly.
Beast Wars,
all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know where your head's at.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And so for me, kind of like we had this conversation last time when we were talking about Wonder Woman. When you gauge and compare a film, you don't just compare it to what's been done currently, but you compare it to everything else that's been done that is connected to the same universe.
Sure. Everything in its oeuvre.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a French word.
I was going to say, it sounded like you had something caught in your throat.
Oeuvre.
Yeah?
Hot rod.
Oy. So comparing it to everything else that I've
seen.
It's
going to be a good show.
Oh, yeah. Especially that 1986 film. You know, before going in, I was hoping, because we had talked about this on the show, I had speculated, I think Unicron is in the film. I think that object in the film is Unicron. And so coming into this, I was like, oh, that'd be so great if they're pulling from this storyline. That'd be so great from the 1986 film.
Could you explain to our loyal listeners what you mean by Unicron?
So in the 1986 film, the Transformers of the movie, it's weird saying the twice. Either way.
Yeah, it's really awkward.
But
it was the one misstep with that particular installment.
So in that film, Megatron is jettisoned out into the void of space, left for dead, and he is picked up by this large planet-sized sentient robot named Unicron.
Mm-hmm.
Unicron absorbs Megatron and tells him that either he dies or he serves him by helping him destroy Cybertron,
which is the home planet of the Transformers.
Exactly. So this planet-sized being has the capability of destroying planets, but he needs Megatron's help to lead him to Cybertron. Well, obviously Megatron agrees, and he becomes Galvatron because the planet gives him all these powers.
Right.
So Unicron obviously is this big, giant...
Can give you a little boost here, Megatron.
And Unicron is this ginormous just ball of badness. You know,
it's a planet, yeah.
It's just bad.
It's like, well, in a way, it's sort of like Ego the Living Planet from Marvel.
Exactly, actually, yeah.
In a way.
Because they both, the similarities in terms of how they destroy
like
it.
Or it's like the Technodrome.
Oy. Anyways.
Sorry, you probably think we're meandering, but really, this is what
needs to be
done.
This is the more interesting part about this conversation.
I was thinking before we started recording, I would almost like prefer to talk about the fact that we saw it in IMAX 3D, which I think is the best format to see a movie that has good visual effects. Because there, I mean, I don't know who did them. I'm assuming ILM was involved again, like they have been with all the other ones, but a lot of the effects themselves, while it's bewildering and you can't track all the things that are going on, it's incredibly great in that format. And I'm I would rather talk about the format in which we saw the film than the film itself.
Right.
So now we're definitely on this, you know, rabbit trail of, I would rather talk about a 1986 cartoon movie than the movie that we saw a day ago.
Yeah. No, I would actually much rather talk about that too, but...
So Unicron is the big, bad... nemesis of Cybertron.
Exactly. Nemesis
it's
of just
the
pretty
yin
much
to the yang.
It's the nemesis of pretty much the galaxy because he eats planets. He's
sure.
So,
like Galactus.
Yes, exactly. So you expect, after seeing all these trailers, if you're familiar with that film, you would half expect that this ginormous thing coming to Earth is Unicron. And I got excited. I was stoked. And I'm like, that'd be so cool. Because then there'd be some kind of connectivity between this film and that film. And then that would do justice to all the fans who have been plobbing money at you know, Michael Bayham, you know, for all the stuff that he's been doing. It would finally pay off and I would feel resolved.
Silly rabbit.
Tricks are for everybody else who buys Michael Bayham's gaga. Okay, so what about you, Chad? What did you think before going into the film?
What did I expect? Absolutely nothing. The only thing, ever since the witnessing the second one, and I don't even remember what the second movie was called.
Revenge of the Fallen?
Revenge of the Fallen. Ever since that film, that film still, it's one of my least, it's near the top of my most despised films that I've ever seen. I think that it's really, like, to go from the first film to the second film was a hard shift into, like, I don't know, the wrong direction. So I've hated the franchise ever since then. The only thing I've ever thought since that film was, please don't screw up Bumblebee, because Bumblebee is the only redeemable aspect of the entire live-action film franchise. Mm. And there have been moments when they've almost screwed him up, and I've been very upset with them for doing that, because he, even for free, we go to these screenings for free. Even for free, the only reason I would consider going to one of these films is because I'm hoping that Bumblebee does something amazing, because he's the only aspect for me worth watching. And I think that that proved true again in this film for me personally. Mm. Mainly because Bumblebee, Optimus, Cade, who is Mark Wahlberg's character, and I mean arguably Anthony Hopkins, are the only ones that actually really, really matter in this film. There are others that are positioned as if they matter, but they kind of just really don't. There's not a lot of story associated with any of the other characters, and there are a lot.
Oh, no, there really are.
Like, from the beginning, they're giving you cameo after cameo after throwback after whatever, and basically there's no reason for any of them to be there other than the visibility factor, I guess you could say. The moment when the audience says, oh, yeah, that one. And then, like, they prove to be completely irrelevant. But then, again, the story really is irrelevant. But it's trying really hard to be relevant. So anyway, going into the film, I had literally zero expectations. All I was hoping for was that they wouldn't screw up Bumblebee in some irreparable fashion, because they're giving him his own solo film as a spinoff.
Which you would almost worry, because of the fact that they're giving him a spinoff, that I don't know, that they might do something with the character to kind of be like, so to celebrate the life of this character, we're going to do a solo, kind of like the Han Solo thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he perished in this past in The Force Awakens. If you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, whatever.
Wow. Wow, Eddie. Wow. You just dropped that. Wow.
Yep. Take it as you will.
No, it's okay.
No.
I mean, if you don't know that by now, shame on you.
Yes. But you would think maybe that might be part of their thinking. Like, oh, well, darn, if they're going to do a Bumblebee solo film, then, you know, maybe it means that they're actually going to kill off the character. And so that's in my mind.
But we didn't have it confirmed until just a couple days ago that it was set in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, like, we didn't know that it wasn't post The Last Night.
True.
You know,
honestly, I didn't know about it until you had mentioned it. So before we actually saw the film, and you were like, oh, yeah, because they're going to do a Bumblebee spinoff. I'm like, oh, crap, they're probably going to kill him. Do it in some glorious, huge explosion of, you know, metal and green fluid, whatever.
So, spoiler alert, Bumblebee goes to pieces twice in this film.
I was going to say several times. Yeah, it's true.
But they don't kill him, thankfully.
So, in terms of characters, you were kind of touching on it. There are a lot of characters in this film. And not just, like, second-rate, you know, side characters. We're talking main characters, people who are constantly on screen, and you're apparently supposed to have an interest in who they are. Like, obviously, Mark Wahlberg and Laura Haddock are main characters, as well as Anthony Hopkins. He's another one.
Yes. I mean, I would say with all of these, arguably main characters. Mark Wahlberg, sure. He is for sure the main character of the story.
Well, and then you have Josh Duhamel's character, who reemerges from the previous trilogy.
He gets
a
lot of screen time.
He does. And you're like, okay.
He doesn't do much with it, but, I mean, he's there.
He's usually getting instructions every time we see him on screen.
Pretty much,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you got to do this, you got to do this.
Or contradicting his own, like, decisions from 25 minutes before, where he was, you know, a good guy, and then suddenly he's like, yeah, go ahead, light him up.
Yeah.
Why? Like, there was just, there's a lot of just sitting there saying, why? And then chastising yourself for caring enough to ask the question, because, I mean, if you don't know by this time, if you've seen the other films and you don't know by now the way that this works,
mm-hmm.
well, that's on you.
True. And then you have the newcomer, Isabella Moner, who plays, oddly enough, Isabella.
Isabella.
Mm-hmm.
With a Z.
Which, you know what sucks? They have her prominently in most of the trailers as the main person to watch. You're watching this little girl. She's doing this. I'm going to stay and I'm going to fight. You know, that whole sequence. And you're like, okay, so she's obviously a key character throughout the whole film. You only get her in like the beginning and the end.
Yeah, mostly in the beginning. I mean, even in the end, she's like only there. She's a token character among dozens, literally dozens of other token characters by the end sequence of the film. Like, they completely just dropped her out of the story until it was convenient to have her show up again so that Mark Wahlberg could say something like, oh, we're a family.
Yeah.
You know, like, just why? You didn't earn it. It doesn't make any sense. The fact that you're all still alive doesn't make any sense. The fact that you're all still, that you're all standing around each other doesn't make any sense. What are you all doing here?
Yeah. And then it's time to get to the Transformers. So in terms of the vast amount of people that are in this film, or a vast amount of characters, you mm-hmm. got obviously Bumblebee, that you've mentioned. You have Hound, played by John Goodman.
He's mostly annoying.
He really is.
I mean, like, he mainly is there to be annoying, which is a shame.
It's not like...
Because it's John Goodman.
There's no difference between his character in what he's... I think he was more interesting in the last film than he was in this film. Because he appears in that last one.
Right.
And then you have Drift, played by Ken Watanabe, which was a total waste of a great actor for me. Because you really don't...
A super cool character. Wasn't he the one that was like kind of rollerblading in the fourth one?
Mm-hmm.
Like just kind of, well, drifting while transformed and standing around. But yeah, I none of these characters matter. None of them. Like not a single one.
Nope. Because then you still had Hot Rod.
Hot Rod, who's French for some reason.
It's just really weird.
And everybody was super excited about his debut because he's a throwback to that same film that you were talking about earlier, the cartoon movie.
There was a Hot Rod in that film.
You sure don't know it.
No.
I mean, you'd have to just be a fan to know in any way that this new character is supposed to be a reflection of that one from the cartoon.
And then you had all the side Transformers such as Mohawk, who is this...
He's a Decepticon.
Motorcycle
with,
dude,
like, a frog face and a mohawk.
You had Nitro Zeus, which was really...
Whatever.
And then...
Forgettable.
Then you had Barricade. You had Wheels. You had the World War One tank.
Right, outside the castle.
And then you had Squeaks. Then you had Crosshairs, which was the green guy. Crosshairs was the green Autobot.
I thought that was Drift. Oh, no. Drift was the... Never mind.
Drift was the red, pinkish one.
Okay.
And then, of course, you have...
Well, because here's the thing. Mm. You get... As if you remember people... Characters' names. And not that it's important. But there's a whole sequence in... I don't know. The first... Like the third... A third of the way through the movie. What you would call your first plot point. Which is where things start to take a turn. The governments of the world are making a deal with Megatron for reasons unknown. And Megatron is saying, I want you to release my companions. And they're like, okay, which ones? And he names them off. And each of the ones that he names off gets this stupid, like, freeze frame cut scene with their name plastered over it. Like, you've never heard of these characters, but this is their name.
Yeah.
And of course, like, as with everything else, it's completely discardable. So it doesn't matter. Like, why did you waste our time introducing these characters? Because... You barely even see them.
And here's my... even before that, though, the weird thing for me was the first time you see the first time you see Megatron, and he's in an alley or whatever.
He's like sitting on a pile of junk inside of a building.
Yeah.
Yelling at Barricade for not getting something.
He does not look like how he looked like in the last film.
Well, he never does. He yeah. always changes.
And it's like, when did this happen? At what point in time was it okay for him to just be different? I mean, what happened, you know? And the inconsistency there from the second film,
sure.
from the fourth film to this film was like, that doesn't make any sense. And then, of course, you get Optimus Prime for the little bit that he's in the film.
Right. Like, he's first of all, he's like comatose drifting through space
mm-hmm.
in the very, very beginning. Well, not the very, very beginning, but close to the
yeah.
beginning of the film. And then there's a bit of a scene where he's picked up by Quintessa, the mother of all Transformers, maybe-ish. I don't even... Where did she come from? Is she a real character? Do you know?
Well...
It sounded made up to me, but my memory of my childhood yeah. is foggy, and so maybe she existed before. Anyway, and then... Yeah, you have a few moments of the battle sequences where he comes into play when they feel like it's convenient to use him. And per usual, when they don't think it's convenient, he just, like, I don't know, goes somewhere else and doesn't participate. Which is a theme. It's a thing that happens regularly in this franchise that's hilarious to me.
And in terms of Quintessa, there are such beings as Quintessens, which they're actually mentioned in that 1986 movie.
Okay.
But not
a singular Quintessa?
Not that I know of. I don't know.
Quintessa the succubus?
If anybody knows, let us know, because we're clueless. But
let Eddie know. I'm totally content to remain clueless. I'm serious, 100%.
So it's like Optimus is...
Leave me in the dark.
...is floating through space, and apparently he's got like some kind of navigational... you know, thing going on, because he was able to find Cybertron just by floating.
Well, kind of. I mean, Cybertron was coming to Earth already anyway, so...
Yeah.
Did he find it, or did it
find him?
Well,
he landed on it, like, superhero style, so I would assume...
I mean, it didn't even look like he was very far away from Earth. It looked like he was flying past Jupiter or Saturn.
Mm-mm.
So, hello, he didn't really do
He didn't
anything.
Leave very far.
Like, he didn't even do anything. That's the greatest tragedy of this entire live-action franchise.
Yeah.
Optimus is supposed to be the dude, like the character, and he is weak sauce and a half every time.
It's true, because in this film...
Every time. And it's hilarious.
He makes his touchdown with, you know, Cybertron and this, you know, this witch of a woman or whatever she is, you know, has him, you know, chained up and tells him that Cybertron is gone, but that... there's a way to save Cybertron, and that the only way is by finding the artifact or the staff of, which is the staff of Merlin, which, okay, let's talk about this for a second.
Oh, let's not.
That opening sequence was so bad. You have this massive, which before it got to the Merlin part, it was actually looking halfway decent, like, oh, okay, this is a battle with King Arthur and his, you know, and his knights, and they're yeah. they're battling against like these Scandinavian, you know, the Scandinavian horde.
Saxons. Yeah.
Okay, historian.
Well, they're okay. Yeah, it's fine. There's not even any point in going into the nuances. So yeah, they're fighting. They've got flaming cannonball things,
and they're waiting on Merlin to get there with his quote unquote magic, and you have no idea of what Merlin is or who Merlin is or whatever, because it's the beginning of the film, and they're like, oh, it isn't until he says he's just a drunkard that's when you realize this was going to be a horrible movie, because then you get a close-up of Merlin and it's actually just Stanley Tucci in a wig
and a fake beard
saying
that he's sozzled or something
yeah.
like that.
Ultimately, then he's drunk.
Like, I'm so drunk right now.
And people are dying. But it's okay, because he's drunk.
Like, late to the war. They're all waiting on him. He's drunk. They just said, oh, he's just drunk somewhere. And then he introduces himself with, oh, wow, I'm really drunk right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, three people in the audience laughed. And,
which
of
wasn't
course, that's
funny.
One of those, like, oh, right. These movies, they're not made They're made for the lowest common denominator, and I don't say that as a way of putting you down if you enjoy the movies, but truly, there's nothing articulate, complex, or particularly compelling outside of the exact moment when something is said or done about the way that these movies are created. It's really made to just show you something really base and really obvious right there in front of your face and then move right along. And because if you like that, then this is the perfect kind of movie for you.
Because, you know, this is the same kind of conversation that we've had when it came to the Fast and the Furious films or the XXX films.
Oh, brother.
You know, it's along those same lines of just ridiculousness and audacity of them trying to do this kind of stuff and want people to take them seriously. It's incredible how many times Michael Bay will go on record and say, well, I thought this was a great film and we did an awesome job and we did this and that. I'm like, who are you listening to? Who are you? Who is telling cha-ching, you? Who is feeding you these lies? Because it's just, yeah.
That's all it is.
I completely agree. That's all it is for this entire franchise. But it's like, is there anybody who cares about this property at all in the company that he keeps? Because if I were in that company, I'd be like, dude, come on. Like, can we just focus on one storyline and let's make it run through the entire narrative? One storyline. Well, what about if we did? No, just one storyline. Well, what about the robot that can do? One storyline, and just keep that solid through. And then we'll end it off with a proper ending where there's resolve and there's completion of story arcs. And yeah, and I'm pretty sure it'll go in one ear and out the other. But still, it's sad because this is such a great property. Do you remember the first time you heard that there was going to be a Transformers film?
I do.
And do you remember that excitement that you had of just knowing that a huge property that has been loved by millions and millions of people all over the world, and have the cartoons have been a part of people's childhood, they've been a part of, you know, the upbringing of many people throughout their entire life, to see this being put into a full-fledged film, only to see it fall so hard from 1, 2, 3, 4, and now 5. It's like, I just really wish, and I mean this in the best of ways, I just really wish this franchise would just take a break and Michael Bay would just step away.
Well, now he says that he will. I know he said it before.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, the... I can't believe I'm going to say this.
Really?
I think that this film, The Last Knight, was a sincere attempt to make a serious recovery from whatever the fourth one was called. Because the fourth one, like, just...
Age of Extinction?
Completely deteriorated. I mean, it was laughably terrible.
Yeah.
By the time they're showing the dinosaurs, Dinobots... it was just like, excuse me, what? What and why? And wait, no, but what? No. And you're just doing that continually for the last, like, third of that film.
It's true.
And then here you've got, like, well, we're going to make the story of the Transformers extend all the way back into ancient times on Earth. And they've always been around and it's connected to all the leaders of the world. And what, like, they try. They really... They fail, but they try to do some dramatic, sweeping things that they seem to be taking very seriously. I mean, you don't hire Sir Anthony Hopkins to be a slapstick performer. Now, he, at some points in the narrative, he is reduced to being a slapstick performer, but that's not his function. His function is basically, hey, y'all, take it seriously, because I'm British. And you know what I do if you make me angry? I eat your face. And it's just, it's one of those, like, I think that they really tried a serious reboot. And because of, and I won't say it's only Michael Bay, because of the creative leadership at the helm of the franchise, they once again have something that buckles under its own weight and amounts to like nothing. Like basically just 2.5 hours. Yeah, two and a half hours.
Well, to give it credit, it is 2 hours and 29 minutes.
That's not credit. That's just like, that's mercy.
That's mercy.
That's mercy upon the audience. We're not going to steal that last minute from you. You can go ahead and walk out while the credits are rolling, because even if there is a cut scene, you're not going to care.
Yeah.
I think they tried to recover. And you know, I think that they just, it's just a giant mess. The whole thing is a giant, I mean, even from the beginning, you're talking about that King Arthur sequence. Mm-hmm. You start, I mean, it's almost like the beginning of Gladiator.
Yeah.
Where Gladiator starts with the Romans versus the Germanic tribes in the forest with the fireballs and the yelling and the fighting and whatever. Dramatic.
Very.
Dark and gritty. Really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You've even got, like, Maximus on his horse leading a bunch of cavalry to flank people.
Yep.
And here in this movie, you've got King Arthur and his knights on their horses waiting for Merlin to show up. And then as soon as you meet Merlin, it all falls apart. Falls apart. And you're like, okay, can we move past this part of the story? Because this is terrible. But even in the opening sequences, and maybe this was partially because of the IMAX screen, it's really big. The motion is very fast in that first sequence. But I'm like, this is just a bunch of visual noise right now. The cuts, the pans, the swiping of the camera, everything was so fast. The explosions of fireballs and whatever. It was just a bunch of noise right from the beginning that you've already seen done better.
Mm-hmm.
17 years ago by Ridley Scott. That's all I'm going to say about that. Hashtag favorite.
Well, and then even then, the introduction of everybody else throughout the film, you get an awkward introduction to Isabella, which is that entire sequence in the trailer, pretty much. Everything that you see in the trailer is her entire introduction. And it's like every time you see her, for some reason, Michael Bay is like, okay, every time the camera's on you, I want you to cry. And
basically,
She cries every time she's on camera. So...
That's because somebody has a reflector off out of the frame and is like blasting sunlight into her face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, really, that happens. I know it's one of his tricks. I mean, it's one of the like the beautiful visuals of Michael Bay. But like, I mean, it happens a lot in this movie where people are just like sunblasted out of nowhere.
So,
including her a lot, and I think that's why she's crying, because she's like, I can't
see. I don't want to be in this anymore. And then, so...
The actress has a lot of potential.
Yeah, no doubt. I think she was one of the...
I mean, she was given a junk part, but she did a lot with it.
Oh, yeah,
For a child performer, she was really, really cool.
I'll give her that credit. She was one of the brighter points of the film. Unfortunately, her amount of screen time was... extremely limited, so we didn't really see how much she could really, you know, unleash. But let me get to the biggest...
yes, please.
Biggest sin that this film does. So we talked a little bit earlier about Unicron. So as I mentioned earlier, Unicron was this ginormous sentient being robot who is the devourer of worlds and whatnot. Non-Marvel.
I was going to say, he is not the devourer of worlds.
He's the devourer of planets.
No.
So, in this film, there is a Unicron. And...
ish.
Well, ish. There
are references to Unicron.
Now...
yes.
Are you ready to hear who Unicron is? Unicron is another...
wait. Okay, now I'm ready.
Unicron is another name for Earth.
Stop it.
Yes. How ridiculous is that? That you're going to make... so, apparently, the entire time, the devourer of worlds, the destroyer of galaxies, the one thing that can grant power and take it away and destroy just massive amounts of the parts of space is in the Earth where the Transformers have been the entire time. And then you tell them, and Optimus is like, Unicron, I will destroy. He gets all butthurt. It didn't even
right.
take
his
much for him to be.
His face turns red when she slaps him, and then his eyes turn purple, and suddenly he's a bad guy.
And even before that, when she's like, that's Unicron, and he's like, oh. You know, he gets his aha moment or whatever, and it's like, what kind of lazy. Just. It's ridiculous to me because the film, the cartoon. It lays it out a little bit better, and there's more of a cohesive story for it for Unicron, and ultimately you meet Unicron, you meet Primus, who is the twin brother of Unicron, and the battle and whatnot, all that takes place. That's a you know content for another show. But either way, in this film, apparently, Earth is Primus. And
No, Earth is Unicron.
I mean, Earth is Unicron, sorry. That's how upset I am. I want it to change. Earth is Unicron, and it's like, okay, so that's very lackluster, that whole reveal that all this time the biggest foe of all the Autobots and Decepticons has been under their feet the entire time.
See, but that's what you as a fan have to say. Nowhere is it obvious, or has it ever been obvious in this franchise that is the big bad guy.
No!
Like, no. It just comes out of nowhere. Is, by the way, never paid off in this film.
Oh, and by the way, that big floating thing in the sky that's coming that you think
Cybertron?
Is Unicron is Cybertron, which I could have swore in the last film.
Cybertron, who is like basically embodied in a succubus.
Yes.
Personality, who says she's the one that created all the Transformers, and Optimus needs to help her suck all the life out of the Earth.
So that they can
defeat Unicron. And reform Cybertron.
Yes.
Okay, dumb. All of it.
Yeah.
Utterly.
Because.
Stupid.
What?
Just did, stupid, stupid.
Weren't they, didn't they just save the world from Cybertron clashing with Earth in the third film?
Wasn't I don't that, remember. That was, I don't pay attention to these
That
movies.
Was the whole focus of that film. And then apparently it went back to its universe. Where in the world did it get all this time to come back over here to just... Was it just a hop, skip, and a jump? They're like, you know, instead of the elevator, we'll just take the stairs. And they just ended up walking to Earth instead of being teleported because of those little egg thingies that they had in that movie. It just... It's upsetting. Because I... Like I said, as a fan, if that would have been Unicron and they would have went a little bit closer to that source material from the film, mm-hmm. I think I would have forgiven everything else that was an issue with this film. Even the ridiculousness of Stanley Tucci. I would have totally looked over all that. I would have been like, you know
Stanley
what?
Stanley Tucci, who played a role in the fourth film.
Yes.
He was like the Steve Jobs megalomaniac, like, wunderkind tech wizard person. But then in this film, he's Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
There's never any parallel whatsoever drawn between the two characters,
yeah,
at any point. And in fact, the only person who has any connection to Merlin is this one woman who is like a history professor of Arthurian mythology, of course, at Oxford.
Yet she doesn't believe in the Arthurian.
Who is apparently
legend.
One of the main characters of the film, but you don't meet her for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So by the time she shows up, you're like, wait a minute, there's another character we're supposed to be tracking? Why? Like,
oh.
but why?
And here's the big kicker. So the poster has Optimus. It also has maybe a couple times Bumblebee. You think, okay, Transformers, The Last Knight. The only person...
It's going to be one of them.
You think, okay, it's going to be Bumblebee. It's going to be Optimus. Ladies and gentlemen, The Last Knight is Marky Mark.
That's right.
He is given some kind of medallion that apparently acts like this movable armor.
It's stupid.
It's ridiculous.
Per usual.
But apparently, much like Pirates of the Caribbean, where the pieces of Vader or the call goes out, apparently this symbolizes that the time has come for the end of days, which it's that whole just storyline falls apart so much.
Well, I mean, in order to fall apart, you had to really be built to begin with. And it wasn't
it had
like
to be structured.
There's
to start
no,
out
there's
with.
Nowhere to fall apart from. So I don't want to be so dramatic as to say it falls apart. It just it never got off the ground.
It just
at all.
You know what? I think,
but I'm going to disagree with you.
Oh boy,
I'm going to disagree with you about this Unicron thing.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't care. Like, it didn't make any sense. It didn't add or take away anything with regard to the story. Like, it was a convenient tool that the succubus used to turn Optimus into, what did she call him?
Optimus Primus?
No, he had a different name. I don't even remember. Like, Negimus Prime or something. Like, it was something ridiculous. I am now something. And it was ridiculous. It was a stupid, like, what, you're going to change your name? That doesn't make any sense. But he calls himself by a different name when his eyes turn purple and he turns into, like, an agent of evil. But you've got these, like, horn structures growing all over the earth. And you don't see them growing. You have characters talk about how they're growing exponentially, and every time you see them, they're the same size, and they're not changing. And you're like, okay, that, I guess I'll just take your word for it because it doesn't matter anyway. And that leads Anthony Hopkins' character to say, oh, that's because it used to be in a circle when the Earth was Pangaea. That's how long it's been here. It's been here for longer than we have, and all kinds of craziness. I mean, just all... It's super weird. And that puts Stonehenge somehow at the center of the whole thing, which means that Stonehenge is our big monument of this movie where all the bad stuff's going to happen at the end. Whereas in the last one, it was Chicago. So,
yeah.
Just, I mean, all completely irrelevant. Like, it, don't even bother paying attention. You're wasting your brain cells by doing anything to fight the non-logic that happens in these films. But my biggest sin, this is my selection for the biggest sin of this movie. They turned Carson the Butler from Downton Abbey into a foul-mouthed leprechaun robot weirdo. Like, utter weirdo.
And it was.
That, to me, was just like, but... Why cast him as the voice? I know that he's got that quintessential British butler voice. But yeah, he's a robot, apparently from the Dark Ages, built like a clock. I don't remember his name. It's something like Cogsworth, but...
Cogman?
Cogs... It's probably Cogson, because they were trying to Cogman. Make a playoff of Carson, which is the voice actor's live-action role in Downton Abbey. But... it was so bad. It was all bad. Every bit of it was bad. The rage, he has like fits of rage.
Yeah.
And
which, mind you, he's only 4 foot tall, so it's like the
fits. He's like the personal assistant of Anthony Hopkins' character, who's the last of his own family and whatever, and all this, you know, stuff that movies do that they don't all have to do, but of course they think they all have to do, so they go ahead and do it. And I just, number one, yet another completely discardable character. And number two, why'd you have to do it like that? I mean, I'm not even a huge Downton Abbey fan. I started watching it out of curiosity for how could a show like that be so ridiculously popular? I haven't seen all of the seasons, but I've seen a few. And I don't know. It was very distracting to me. Because, again, Unicron never shows up.
No.
Like, there's never an actual appearance of Unicron. So it was completely, like, you can just totally disregard any of that. And it's not going to change the outcome of the movie at all. Like, it truly doesn't matter.
He's right, ladies and gentlemen. It was horrible. It was one of those films where, sadly... I think we may actually have to fail a film. You know, thinking about how we score things.
It's true. I've failed films before, haven't I?
I don't know.
I think I've chosen to not pass a film or two over the 67 episodes now. This one, though, fails with flying colors. This fails in an extravagant way.
Oh, man.
For me.
It does. So, since we're at that point... go ahead.
And here I thought we were going to only talk about this movie for 10 minutes and gift all of you loyal listeners with the shortest podcast in our history. Fail. I'll even give it two fails.
Two fails?
It was a twofer. It was a fail on top of a fail. In terms of Monocle, zero.
Ooh.
No, I'll give it 0.5 because they didn't screw up Bumblebee.
It's true. They didn't kill him.
He is intact as a character. He's the only character of his kind.
Although, Chad, you did mention that he does go to pieces at the beginning.
He does. He goes twice. He goes totally to pieces when you first see him. Mm-hmm. Like, you think he gets killed right away.
It's true.
And then later on, he goes mostly to pieces while he's fighting what Negimus Prime or whatever he calls himself. I still don't remember. It's not Negimus, but it's some stupid name. So they end up fighting because, of course, Optimus, per usual, is a bad guy. And Bumblebee is the only sensible Transformer in the history of these films.
Yeah.
And so Bumblebee, the Valiant, is trying to stop his friend, Optimus, even to the point of letting Optimus kill him almost.
Mm-hmm.
Very admirable. Again, the only character of his kind.
Which, mind you, I think the only scene that actually gave me any kind of emotion was the scene where Bumblebee uses his real voice.
He gets his voice back.
And he's like, Optimus, don't. I would die for you.
You are my oldest friend.
Yeah.
It's
quite touching.
It's not touching in like bring tears to your eyes kind of touching, but it's like, oh, they did something nice.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you didn't screw everything up. You actually did something nice here for 5 seconds. Yeah, because Bumblebee is it's his voice that brings Optimus back to his own senses. And
yeah. Which, mind
his eyes turn blue again, and he's like, oh, I'm Optimus again.
Yeah, which, mind you, Optimus is only evil for like 10, 15 minutes.
And then Optimus, like, I don't know, bounces around and does a few things. And then they get to the big battle at the end, and per usual, Optimus is like, I'm going to lead the way. And he blasts off, and then he disappears.
Yeah.
And he doesn't show up for the first, like, 12 on-screen minutes of this intense battle sequence.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one planet crashing into another. You've got crazy succubus lady, like, leeching the life out of the earth. People and robots are dying everywhere.
Yeah.
And Optimus, who took off before any of them, is nowhere to be found. And he stole the cool dragon. So the dragon is not even in the fight for a while, just so that Optimus can make some blundering entrance on the dragon, which I laughed out loud because I really loved. I love the way that they do. I mean, Optimus, y'all, here's the thing. I know that most people love how evil Darth Vader can be. I've always found Darth Vader to be intensely comical. Like, I laugh at Darth Vader regularly because of the way he moves and talks and all of that kind of stuff. Because he's, to me, I don't know why, I was a kid when I first saw the original trilogy. He's a ridiculously funny character to me.
Mm.
Also, Optimus Prime is a ridiculously funny character. When you really pay attention to what he does, to the way that he speaks versus the way that he acts, and to a lot of the entrances that he makes into climactic battle sequences. I mean, he basically falls. In this one, he like falls off of the dragon. Now, and then they turn it into a really cool moment. But like, they started it with him falling off of the dragon, which I loved. It gave me joy. Because once again, I'm like, Optimus is the court jester of this film.
He is
of most of the films to me.
Yeah.
Megatron doesn't matter. Like,
oh no.
Megatron shouldn't even be in this
There is
movie.
No use of him in this film
He's
at all.
Completely worthless.
His entire story arc is just like, well, you know, we're going to have Transformers, so we might as well put Megatron in. Well, where are we going to fit him? Just find a place to squeeze him in.
Oh, just have him go somewhere. They'll shoot him, he'll run away. Then he'll come somewhere else, they'll shoot him, he'll run away. Mm-hmm. Like, no threat whatsoever.
No. So yeah.
Sorry, I've totally hogged the mic as usual.
It's all right.
And I don't like things. So 0.5 monocles and a fail. How about you, Eddie?
I'm gonna have to fail the film. It just was all over the place. And I do give it credit where credit is due. There are some of those scenes where they shot it in IMAX and it was okay, it was decent. But the problem is that there was this constant switching of back and forth from a regular camera back to the IMAX camera back to the regular camera and the regular. And so you would have the black bars for the widescreen, and then the IMAX camera is a, you know, 6x9. So then it would go to square and then back to that. And yeah, you know what? In regular sequences, that'd be fine. But in the middle of battle sequences, when all this stuff is happening, black bar gone, black bar gone, black bar gone.
Yeah.
It got annoying. And it took away from so much. not that the film was great enough as it
there
is.
There wasn't a lot to take away from. But so I see what you're saying, though. Yeah.
So I would have to give it a one, and that's being
traitor.
Gracious, because only reason why I would give it a one is because some of those scenes were actually decent, and two.
I'm giving it a one because you thought that the baby T-Rex transformer looks like your dog.
I was going to say exactly that. The baby T-Rex looks like my dog. That was it.
Which is ridiculous. Y'all, I'm going to make him post a picture of his dog on the Film Lossiverse page. You tell us if it looks like anything like a fire-breathing T-Rex. Robotic, fire-breathing baby T-Rex. It doesn't. But basically, they have these baby dinosaur transformers, Dinobots, baby Dinobots,
which doesn't make any sense,
to essentially play the role of puppies.
Ultimately,
like the puppies would have in a normal like film that's not about robot creatures. That's what these little baby Dinobots are doing for part of the beginning sequence of the film.
And what did you say was the first rule of marketing? What sells?
Babies and puppies, and will sell anything.
That's what got me on the half a monocle. But that about wraps up.
But where was the other half, though? You gave it a full monocle.
Oh, well, and on some of the other scenes, the IMAX scenes that actually
had
good 3D.
You liked some of the visual. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's our thoughts on this film. Let us know what you think on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Before we go, we're going to leave you with a little bit of movie news. The untitled Han Solo film loses its directors. As the summer continues to heat up, so does the news that directors Phil Lord and Chris Miller have exited the Han Solo spinoff film.
Exit stage right.
Citing, quote, creative differences.
Exit stage left. They didn't go out the same door.
There you go. And stating that a new director will be announced soon, Lucasfilm states that the movie, whose title is yet to be released, will wrap up in a matter of weeks, reportedly as few as three, before returning for reshoots later in the summer. In an official statement, Lucasfilm says that they will, quote, move forward with a directional change and that, quote, unfortunately, our vision and process weren't aligned with our partners on this project. The film stars Alden Ehrenreich as the intergalactic road.
Ehrenreich. Is how you, I think.
I would agree with you more than I would agree with myself. Alongside Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian and Junus Sotamo as Chewbacca. Woody Harrelson, Emilia Clarke, and Thandie Newton also star in the film. And just to let you know a few upcoming weekend releases. We have The Big Sick, The Bad Batch, and of course this film, Transformers The Last Night, which...
Oh wait, I thought those were all names for this movie.
The Bad Batch and The Big Sick.
Yeah. Huh, those are other movies. Those are better movies by proxy, I'm just telling you. They're better. I don't know anything about them, but they're better. Go see them instead.
Either of those two.
I know you won't listen. I know you'll go see Transformers anyway.
And you'll still pay money.
I forgive you.
That about wraps up another awesome show. Again, this was great to talk about and just kind of... It's almost like therapy. We're releasing all this.
It's true. But by this point, literally though, by this point we've spent 3.5 hours on this film, which is 3.5 hours too long.
That's true. And we will leave it at that. So if you have any thoughts, leave it on our social media pages, please.
That's right.
But then again, thanks again for listening. And of course, from all of us here at the Film Lossophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
Class dismissed.